I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. It's really just a photograph, and an old one at that. A black and white image of a young girl in a Vermont spinning mill from 1910. You can see it on our website, wunc.org. Now, it's a full-length portrait, but nothing you'd call flattering. Her clothes are scruffy. But at the same time, it's unsettling. The girl stands facing the camera, looking right at the camera. That's what caught the eye of the writer Elizabeth Winthrop. She was so mesmerized by the girl's eyes that she created an entire world for her. It's now a book called Counting on Grace. Now, something else happened in the research for this book, and I'll get to that in just a moment. First, though, back to that old photo and why the girl means so much to the author, Elizabeth Winthrop.
She has an absolutely beautiful face, and she's about 12 years old. She's wearing a filthy smock, and she is standing in front of a huge machine, which I now know is called a spinning frame. And her hair is pulled very tight back off her head in the way that an older woman would wear her hair, not a child. Her eyes look directly at you. She is world-weary, I would say. She looks as if she's been in this mill for quite a while. Her left arm is propped up on the machine as if the machine is her best friend. She's leaning against it.
It's a kind of posture of a man leaning with his elbow on a bar looking at the camera, right? She's got that left elbow back. Why do
and
you say it makes it look like the spinning frame is her friend in the way that she rests her arm there?
She's so familiar with it. It's not something that scares her. I think the photographer might be scared of it, but this child knows this machine so well. She's very casual in her leaning against it, in the way her arm is propped up against it. Her left arm also looks to me like it's been broken and never set properly. It's sort of withered.
I was going to ask you about her arms, because while she's 12 years old, she seems very thin. Even the little parts of her ankles and her calves that you can see sticking out from underneath this grease-stained smock, they seem thin.
That's right. The line that the photographer wrote under it was, anemic little spinner, North Pownall, Vermont, 1910.
She has the sleeves of her shirt rolled up very high on her arms, and as you said, she's got this bulging pocket on this smock. What's the story behind the pocket?
Well, as a writer detective, I came up with, probably she either has her sandwich or some kind of food in there for lunch, but more probably it's a handkerchief or a piece of cloth so she can cough up the lint that she's been breathing in all day long working in the mill. The other possibility is children were hired in these mills because their fingers were so small that when the machine was shut down for cleaning, they could snake their fingers in and out of the machine to pull out the dirty lint, and she may have put it in her pocket.
When did you first see this photograph, Elizabeth?
It was the summer of 2002, and it was in a show in the Bennington Museum in Bennington, Vermont, and it was a show of all Lewis Hine's child labor photographs that were taken in the state of Vermont.
What does he do with that photograph that made you stop either at that moment when you saw it for the first time or made you come back to it?
I think it was, first of all, this little girl was all alone in front of her machine. A lot of the pictures that Hine took were groups of children, but this child stood all alone. She looks directly at the camera, which is an amazing thing because I doubt she had ever seen a camera before in 1910. He probably had to use a magnesium flash, which meant that there was a spark of real fire in for the moment in which the flash goes off. And she doesn't flinch. She looks directly at him. She engages you with her eyes. It's as if she's saying, I've seen it all. Nothing you can do can surprise me.
The book that you wrote based on seeing that photograph is called Counting on Grace. It's the name that you gave to the little girl, and you sketch in this wonderful story about her life in a mill town in Vermont at the turn of the century. She's torn between school and work in the mill. What led you to think that you could construct an entire personality around that one photograph, Elizabeth?
I think that when I looked at this child, I thought, tired as she is, she also has a toughness to her. Hine did that. He made you see the children had grit and pluck and that they hung on no matter what. They were tough. And so I thought, I want to make a feisty girl who thinks she can help her family in the mill, can make money in the mill, but at the same time wants to get out of the mill.
I've done a lot of driving in that part of the country, and whether you're going through western Massachusetts or southern Vermont or upstate New York, there are these secondary highways that take you past these old mill towns, and you see through the trees these brick buildings with their rows of windows. And I always wondered what it was that went on in those places. I'm wondering if you had that same puzzle in your mind when you were constructing the story.
I did. I find mill buildings very engaging in a funny way. The windows look to me like eyes, and I always think of who was looking out of them. Did they ever get a chance to leave the spinning frame or whatever they were, the loom, and go look out the window? Lewis Hine actually did a very famous photograph of a little girl about this age in a North Carolina mill in a town called Whitnell, I think, where she is looking out the window, and it's called A Glimpse. And I think I also had that in the back of my mind somewhere.
Take me inside one of those mills, if you can, because I know that part of your work as a writer in putting this story together drew you to understand exactly what these kids had to do. What was this little girl's job? What did she have to do all day?
She was called a doffer. Doffer simply means to do off. So what she had to do was take the bobbins. Now, the bobbins are where the cotton, when it comes into the mill, it's unprocessed, and it goes through one after another process to be spun into cloth. And she's in the spinning room, which is where it goes through one of its last processes before it goes to the weaving room.
These bobbins you're talking about, Elizabeth, they look like oversized spools of thread without the wooden ends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the bobbin fills up slowly with white thread. And when it is full, it must be removed, and an empty bobbin must be put on that spindle. So when all the bobbins are full, the machine, the frame, is shut down, and she goes along and she takes off the bobbins as fast as possible, because every minute that the spinning frame is shut down, her mother's pay is docked.
So her mother is operating the frame, and the kids are scurrying around kind of in a family enterprise trying to get the bobbins off and blank ones back on again.
That's right. And then when they're all back on again, the mother jiggles the rail. It's a term they say. When the machine is down, it's on the loose pulley. And when it goes back up again, you jiggle the rail and the thread feeds back up onto the bobbin. And if the thread doesn't feed properly, they have to go and piece the ends together. So it's a very intricate job. It's very useful to have small fingers. And plus, the mill agents loved to have children working in there because they had to pay them so little. So you could get an entire family working in a mill for very little money.
And what was the pressure on a family to have all its kids working in the mill? I mean, the story that you tell of the girl that you write about, Grace, is that, you know, she could be a great student. She's sorry when she has to leave school. Why does she have to work in the mill?
Well, first of all, they were in mill housing, and that was one of the requirements in mill housing, that when children reached a certain age, they had to go in the mill, or you couldn't stay in mill housing. You'd be thrown out. So that was one of the things. Grace is torn two ways because, as you say, she finds out the day the book opens that she's the second best reader in the classroom. At the same time, she's very proud to go in the mill because she's going to help her family survive. That extra $2.50 a week could be the difference between sausage in their soup that week or a new pair of shoes for a younger brother.
Let me bring this back to the photograph of the little girl standing in front of the spinning frame. because you said you saw it first as a collection of photographs of child labor taken by the photographer Lou Hines. So if we go back to when he was taking those pictures, was he allowed into the mills? How did that all come about?
It was a fascinating story. Lou Hine was born in 1874, and he worked in a furniture factory his senior year in high school because his father died suddenly, and he never forgot that. He ended up coming to New York and taking pictures in Ellis Island, and then he wanted to follow the immigrants out into America because he was scared America would chew them up and spit them out, and he particularly focused on the children. So from 1908 to 1918, he worked for the National Child Labor Committee, and he did photographs all over the country. He traveled 50,000 miles in a year on trains and in cars. So the mill owners did not want him in their mill. So Mr. Hine was a consummate actor, and he lied his way into the mills. He would say he was selling Bibles. He would say he was a postcard salesman and the mill owners would let him in to sell to the staff.
Uh-huh.
He would say that the most important thing, in the way I used it in the book, is he would say that the head office had sent him to photograph machinery. And then he would put a child in front and say the mill superintendent would say, oh, get the child out of the way, he would say, oh, no, I need it. I need her for perspective. I need her for scale so they can see how big the machine is. He played this trick over and over again. And, of course, in those days, they couldn't check with the head office, so they thought, well, we better let him in. And that's how I reimagined the scene when he walks into this little girl's mill.
Now, there's a great turn at the end of this story, mm-hmm. and that is that after your fascination with the photograph led to the writing of the book and to your understanding of Lou Hine and everything that he was doing, you went back and did some more detective work.
This is how it happened. Mr. Hine wrote in his pocket when he was in the mill. He would scribble in his pocket notes so that he could have an idea of who the children were, because he knew that the photographs wouldn't be believed. He felt that he had to put their names down. It is my understanding that he just wrote Anemic Little Spinner, North Pownall Cotton Mill. However, there was a man who went around, a national child labor investigator named E.F. Brown, and he went into the mill in February 1910 before Lou Hine ever went there. In fact, I think he probably sent Lou Hine there. He went into the mill, and he wrote Addie Laird, spinner in the cotton mill. She says she is 12 years old. The other girls say she is 10. This picture was put on a postage stamp in 1998. She is on a postage stamp, 32 cents. And at that time, the people of North Pownall, the U.S. Postal Service, and the Census Bureau all went looking for Addie. And they looked for Addie Laird, and Addie, they couldn't find her, so they gave up. So nobody ever knew who this child was, which drove me crazy. I thought, she is a symbol. She's on a Reebok ad. She's a symbol of child labor reform, but nobody knows who she is. And Lewis Hine had a wonderful line. He said, I have always been more interested in persons than in people. And that's the way I felt. Okay, now who was she? So I went and found her. It took me a year.
How did you find her?
Well, the first thing I did was I went to the Census Bureau, and in the National Archives, you can find all the census, and there is an archives office in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, in the Berkshires. So I went there, and they have a program where you can type in the name of who you're looking for, the date, and the town. So I typed in Addie, North Pownall, 1910.
Not Addie Laird, just Addie.
Just Addie.
Uh-huh.
Then I thought, what could her name have been? So I typed in Adeline, North Pownall, Vermont, 1910, nothing. I had one more idea, so I typed in Adelaide. Sure enough, up popped Adelaide Harris, North Pownall, Vermont, 1910. And then you are directed to roll 1612, sheet 12B. You know, you have to go find the actual
yeah,
census in this big, dark, scary room with big, you know, drawers. And a man helped me feed the microfiche roll into the machine because my fingers were shaking so much. And I scrolled through all of these sort of flowery handwriting.
Why were your fingers shaking?
Because I thought, maybe I'll find her. And if this didn't work, I didn't know what else to do. So it was sort of my last chance to find her. And I found Addie Card, 12-year-old spinner cotton factory.
Not Addie Laird.
Not Addie Laird.
Now, I know from reading on in that part of your detective story that you were able to actually pick up the threads of her life and find descendants and do it that way.
Exactly.
But what I want to do, if I can, just to close out, Elizabeth, is ask you how the photograph, how your sense of the photograph changed when you looked at it again and said, hey, I know your name.
It was, it's huge. I do not know why I am so connected to this child, but I felt passionate about finding her. It's all very well that she was an iconic symbol and, you know, everybody knows the picture, but who was she? She wasn't just an anemic little spinner. She was a person. She had a whole life. And I wanted to rescue her from anonymity, from just being an icon and her symbol, and bring her back to being a person. And I've just found out that the brochure about the stamp is being changed. I've asked them to change it so her name will now be correct. The Library of Congress is changing their record so her name will now be correct. It's as if I've given her back a life in some way.
What did you learn in all of this, Elizabeth, about how much information can be hidden in a single photograph?
I think that I could definitely imagine writing another novel based on a photograph because there's so many ways that it can take you. It's such a visual trigger for you. I don't think she'll ever be out of my head.
I don't want to necessarily put a crystal ball on the table between us here, but I'm wondering if there are moments in your detective work or in your writing when you thought to yourself that this little girl is somehow calling me to do the work, to identify her, to get this done, to give her a name, to give her the kind of character that you have.
Can I give you one story about that? I went to the Paneltown office expecting to find her gravestone because she was so frail, and I couldn't find her after that first census, the 1920 census. She didn't appear. And there was a lady helping me. She went in the bank vault. She said, well, I was tired. I'd looked through everything I could think of. I'd found her mother's death certificate. I found all sorts of things. I couldn't find her again. And this woman said, well, let me go back in the bank vault and just get one more book out. And she screamed from the bank vault and came running out and said, I swear to you, this book dropped open at this place. It was Addie's marriage certificate. And I thought,
I just got a chill in my spine listening to you tell that story.
Addie pushed that book right off that shelf, I tell you. Because in the census, you lose a girl every time she marries. So it put me back on track. That happened more than once in this search.
Well, that's a great story, and so is yours, Counting on Grace, the novel about her. I want to thank you for coming in and chatting with us.
Thanks so much.
That's the writer Elizabeth Winthrop. If you'd like to see that photograph of Addie Card, or Addie Harris if we use her later married name, you can find it on our website, wunc.org. When you're there, take a moment to send me your story or your thoughts on what you've heard here on the program. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.